Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jot Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome to Jock Talk, episode 87. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. What's the sit rep, bro?
We are 5x5, and the light is red, and we are 5x5. Operation Jock Talk is a go.
Episode 87, who comes to mind?
Two Cowboys, Jake Ferguson, Jay Saldy.
I got one who I can't forget, the great Billy Davis.
Blonde-haired, demolition man, Billy Davis.
That's why I started laughing. Billy Davis is a unique character. He could probably make a lot of money off the field if he was playing these days. Back when he was playing, he was just weird, which was the late 90s. But he was a cool dude. He's a very funny guy these days. But
yeah, comes to mind. I remember the time where he was demanding the ball with Michael Irvin in the huddle. How crazy is that? I heard those type of stories where he got so caught up in himself, he was like, "Nah, give me the ball."
That is true. Billy Davis would be good to talk to because he's probably the kind of guy. Well, I don't know. Sometimes if he had a little more self-awareness, his career might have lasted a little bit longer. Maybe just a couple years, but I don't know. But he'd be good to talk to because he would have some interesting thoughts on his role and his time with the Dallas Cowboys. Show is brought to you each and every episode by Greening Law. You got to always remember, if you're ever involved in an accident, somebody's hurt you, it's not your fault. Somebody's negligence has resulted in your injury. Pick up the phone, get them a call. 972-934-8900 is the number. And check this out. Why you want to call Greening Law? They walk you through the process. This kind of thing can be long and intimidating, scary if you've ever been involved in an accident. One of our listeners involved in an accident a couple days ago told me he picked up the phone to call Greening Law. I already set up an appointment for him to go see a doctor. That's what they do. If you need a specialist, if he needs a specialist, they'll set that up. All he got to do is roll through, show up, and get a look at. But Greening Law is a place to go because they walk you through the process. They tell you when to turn left and when to turn right, when to walk, when to run, when to crawl, when to sit, when to stand. Everything you need to do, they tell you. Now, big law firm, you wonder, where am I on the priority list? You ain't got to wonder. They don't get paid unless you get paid. So you're always at the top of the priority list. It's real talk. It's really that simple. So if you're ever involved in an accident, workplace accident, somebody else's negligence has caused you some harm, pick up the phone, give them a call, 972-934-8900. And here's the other thing. They do all of that so you can focus on what? Two things: healing and renewal. Get your mind right, get your body right, and get your life back. That's what they want you focused on. And so to do, make sure that happens, they take care of everything. Greening Law, 972-934-8900. That's the number. Hey, do me a favor. Plug it in your phone right now. So if you ever need it, you ain't got to look for it. It's already there. It'll cause you it'll make life a lot easier for you if all you got to do is punch up the number, 972-934-8900. Let's give Clarence E. Hill Jr. a call. Because there's actually some real Dak news today. And we'll see what the future holds for Dak Prescott. Now, I don't mind having this conversation by myself.
Call has been forwarded to voicemail. The person you're trying to reach is not available. At the tone, please.
We ain't leaving him no message. Oh, hey, you're right on time.
There you go.
I never had a doubt, my brother. I figured you were still recovering from the owners' meetings since you out there partying with Ryan Clark and other folks.
Yes, I was, and had like a 6-hour flight delay. I was at the airport all day trying to get out of Tampa, out of Orlando. So it was a long evening, but what's up, fellas? How you guys doing?
What's up?
Great. We're trying to separate fiction from reality, hype from hyperbole. What is the latest with Dak Prescott? Is he not getting a new deal, or is this all part of a negotiating ploy where Jerry says we're kind of locked and loaded, and where we at with the contract situation?
Well, I think that the end was playing fast and loose with the locked and loaded. You know, locked and loaded means that they have a deal. You know, they don't have to do anything. So they have a deal that's in place. That does not mean that they won't, can't, or not going to talk about or haven't talked about a new deal. You know, it's a fluid situation. It's all up in there right now. That there's been no movement, and so they are where they are. But there's no decision is made that they're going to go into the season and not have a deal. Or there's no decision to make. They're not going to get a deal, and he's going to hit free agency. None of that is facts. Anything and everything is still on the table. As of now, there is no deal.
Do you anticipate one getting done before the season?
I mean, I think deadline make deals to me is always made deal with the Cowboys, you know, and the hard deadline is not till next year when free agency is real and on the table. I don't know, you know, because I know just my conversations with the Cowboys. You know, is they have this idea that they want Dak to take less. They want Dak to not ask for it all. Dak has a history of winning and not taking less. I don't know what less is, you know, and which is my issue is, you know, if you talk to pundits around the league, you know, Dak could legitimately ask for $60 million. Currently, the highest paid quarterback is making like 55. But, you know, based on his leverage, based on, you know, what the market value is, he can be in line for a deal of $60 million annually. So what is less? Is less 50? Is less 55? Or they expect him to take $40 million when that's way, way below market value. I don't know what that looks like and how that plays. My thing is that certainly they want to get CD done. I don't know how you can sign CD to a deal and not have your quarterback situation settled. I don't know how you can sign CD, which is to me the same situation in Minnesota. How can you guarantee a receiver $30 million and not have it locked and loaded, to use Jerry's words, that you're going to have your quarterback to be able to maximize the return on investment of that contract? Because one thing Jerry talked about is that you sign these guys to a deal and you got to use them. You got to make sure you're getting your money's worth. You know, he talked about, he kept bringing up Amari Cooper and he was making $20 million, but they weren't necessarily getting their money's worth with the balls and the ball distribution going to him. Well, if you're going to pay CeeDee, which they want to do, then you need to make sure you're going to have a quarterback situation that you're going to maximize CeeDee's contract. I don't know how you can do that without having your quarterback situation settled. But they say they're not tied at the hip. But, you know, you pay CD and then you got Trey Lance or somebody else starting or some rookie starting who you don't know if can play. That don't make any sense to me either.
All right, well, that's a lot of good information. Let's try to unpack some of it. Let's go back to Dak. When you say there's no the hard deadline is when he's really a free agent, to me it seems like the hard deadline is the start of the season. And here's why. To me, once I get that close to free agency, which I've never had, why wouldn't I just play it out? Because now I'm here. So let me just see. Y'all don't think I'm worth such and such dollars? Let me see what I'm worth after I put up these numbers this season, and we can see.
Well, because ultimately, number one, Dak has always been a Cowboy and wants to be a Cowboy and wants to end his career with the Cowboys. And if he can get market money with the Cowboys, which he got before, you know, that's still on the table too. I mean, you know, this is still what Dak wants, and you know, Dak don't want to play for Seattle or the Redskins or whoever. He ultimately wants to be with the Cowboys. I mean, that's been his goal. He was a Cowboy fan. You know, he's close. You know, he continues on his career. He can end up with the team's all-time leading passer, hold all the passing records. That's ultimately where he wants to end up. So, you know, it's not necessarily about, well, you're going to let me go. You know, obviously, if he gets to that point and he plays well again, which he loves to bet on himself, and he plays well again, you know, the Cowboys will cave. They've done it before, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's not an issue of you don't trust them. It's an agency to show you. No, you know, and go somewhere else. And you know, that I don't think that's his mindset.
Well, you know Dak as well as anybody. Is his mindset?
Yeah, I mean, Dak loves it. Dak wants to be here. I mean, there's no question about that. And again, it's just like with the Zeke deal, like anything, it's the negotiations. You know, you don't let your money get bad. You don't let negotiations get bad, whatever else. Everybody's trying to win negotiations. You know, so just because they don't get one done in August, that's not going to get bad, not going to play well, not going to say, well, I'm going to show you and hit the market, or I have a chance to hit the market, so I'm going to leave. You know, as long as he gets his money in the end, that's all that matters.
Yeah. I wonder, do you get the sense of how important is it for Dak to get all the money?
I don't know. You know, I don't know.
That's really
ultimately
the $64,000 question. And I ain't talking about no hometown discount. I don't believe in that. But,
yeah.
You know, is it important for him to be the highest paid quarterback, or is it important for him to be, as I like to say, in the subdivision? Or he got to be in the cul-de-sac?
Well, I mean, I think there's no question that he will and should be in the subdivision, you know. But again, you know, whether he ends up at the highest paid or whatever, I just don't know what that looks like for the Cowboys, you know, because, you know, is 55 palatable or is 55 palatable? I mean, I know what you're saying. You know, I don't know how important, especially, you know, I know from a Cowboys standpoint is they have no problem saying, Micah and CD, this is your first deal. We're going to pay you market value. And we're going to make you the highest paid collective position because this is your first time. You've never been there. They've already done that with Dak.
Right.
You
well,
know, and
value
and,
is like, if we're saying, like, 55 at Joe Burrow is the top, I think that's what he's getting. You know, market value, you don't have to, market value is there's the top of the market and there's the bottom of the market and there's the middle of the market. So 52 could be, you know, palatable if you just want market value in the ballpark. But I think the point of it is when I say does he want all the money, there's literally nothing you can't buy when you make $52 million. That you can't when you make $55 million. It's not changing your lifestyle. So then it becomes what's important to you because this little bit of money, relatively speaking, is not changing anything about your life, whether we're talking about $52 million, $55 million, or $58 million a year. None of it's changing your lifestyle.
Oh, I agree. You know, and if Jerry was charging $75 for them parking on 18th Stadium instead of $100, it wouldn't change his lifestyle either. They still right. charge $100. You know, again, I don't know. I know the agent wants, I mean, as any agent wants, you know, you're competing with other agents, you know, it's your reputation on the line. You know, you're setting it up. And for NFLPA and for players, I mean, you want players to get what they get because it sets the floor for the next guy. It's not just about you, it's about the quarterback market, it's about the next quarterback coming down the line. You always want to raise the floor on what the market is because it's for the good of the game or the good for the players to come behind you. You know, you have that notion. Again, you know, you go back to the first time. I mean, you know, one reason why, you know, Dak got the most is because he got what he got because he held out and was stubborn and wanted to maximize his earnings. You know, everybody, you know, there's this conversation whether the Cowboys should have waited. Well, part of the reason they waited and because Dak made them wait. You know, Dak wasn't taking less money. You know, Dak made them wait and, you know, until they had to get it done. He bet on himself. You know, at this point, I don't know what that is. I know Dak said he wants to work with them, and they said he want to work with him. But what is working with them, working with each other look like?
Right.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I don't know what working with each other. I don't know what's palatable for both sides that's going to make everybody happy. You know, and so, you know, this is where we are. I don't know if it's a 4-year deal because, you know, Dak was very prudent the last time, which is why we're back here so quickly. You know, he was one of the few quarterbacks. You look, most of his extensions are 7-8-year extensions. You know, he could spread the money out and all the other stuff. That, you know, these, like Burrow and them had 1 or 2 years left in the rookie deal, and then they got a 5-year extension, so it's like a 7-year thing. And, you know, they let Dak contract run out. He got, you know, he getting all his money. He got a true 4-year deal, $160 million, getting all of the money. You know, and you know, is it another 4-year deal? Is it a 5-year deal? Is it an 8-year deal? How does it all look? When you know, what does Dak want? So again, it's a moving target. But at this point right now, they are locked and loaded. Dak is under contract. There's no question that Dak will be the quarterback in 2024. You know, the question is, in 2025, does that make it urgent right now? It's not an urgent situation today.
No, it's not. But it's just it's more interesting than anything to me because they truly setting up, if they don't do anything with it, you know, next year, I mean, 2025 could be really interesting because you could theoretically blow it up and restart with a quarterback, a coach, and everything else. And that's it seems like the anti-Cowboy way because they like to be relevant. You know, they don't like to be bad. They like to change on the fly, like 8-8, 8-9, 9-8. That's a little different than, you know, those sad years where you win 3 or 4 games and be at the top of the draft.
Yeah, and Jerry addressed blowing up. Like, you know, he's not interested. They're too close to blow it up, you know, right now. Because yeah, some people thought they should blow it up this year. I mean, I don't know how you blow it up after going 12-5. No matter what you say, what we have done that. Yeah, so they're too close to blow it up. And there's, you know, I don't know that. I think, you know, right now they're talking about the cap which impacts, you know, the decisions they're making. You know, right now, on paper, I don't know how they, you know, they're asking to win with less. They went in with all in, and now they're asking Mike McCarthy to win with less. I just don't know. I think that, you know, certainly they have two. They have still have the best quarterback in the division. They still have the best receiver in the division. They still have the best passer in the division. They have two, you know, probably the best cornerback duo in the division. They still have talent to win with and compete with. I don't know if they have talent to take that next step. And you're asking him not just to tread water. You're asking him not just go to him. You're asking him to go to the NFC Championship Super Bowl for the first time since 1995 with, right now, as it looks, a lesser roster than he ended the season with.
Yeah, you know, we're still early in the player acquisition game, but it's – I don't know.
And what I'm saying is that even if they don't get past that with Mike McCarthy, there's a thing, well, you can improve the roster the following year because you're still going to have CD, you're still going to have Michael, you're still going to have Dak, theoretically you could. You're still going to have Tyler Smith. You're still going to have Trevon Diggs and Bland at quarterback. You know, you still got the pieces of foundation for a team that you still can still add to and take the next level.
Right.
You know, there's no such thing as, to me, the window closing with that foundation. is that what do you add to that to ultimately get you over the top?
Interesting. So what's next with CD? Because Jefferson, I think, is getting 5 years, $30 million a year. That seems to be, I think that's right around where Tyreek is. So that seems to me that's right around where CeeDee Lamb will come in at $29, $30 million a year.
I mean, that's what it's, so the Tyreek deal is funny money. It's really more of a 25-year a deal. The last year of his deal, the last year's deal asked for, it has a base salary of $47 million that he will never see.
Okay.
Which makes his annual salary based on the deal $30 million. Not a real $30 million because he's not getting that last year of that deal.
Yeah, I just looked at it. You're right.
So just talking to people, that's not a real $30 million a year deal. What is real is that most likely CD will get close to that. I mean, not CD, but Jefferson's going to get close to that. CD's going to get close to that, that's what it is. Again, I think the Cowboys, I think the same thing with CD. Why would I sign when Chase can sign and Jefferson can sign and set the market? I need to see what they're going to sign for before I sign. I think that's part of that. I mean, it takes two to tango. Certainly, I think that they do want to get CD done. I think there's a chance they get CD done first before Dak. But $30 million for CD is real. Sure.
That's. And I had some, I think some people on Twitter were like, well, why would CD sign when he doesn't know who his quarterback's going to be?
And that's right.
The answer to me is simple, because you haven't gotten $30 million a year. I mean, I don't care who the quarterback is. Give me my money.
What? Again, my issue was, why would the Cowboys sign CD without knowing the quarterback would be? Because, again, you need to make, I'm going to pay you. I need to make sure that that I can, maximize, my investment by having a quarterback that's going to get you the ball and help us win games. I mean, I can sign any Joe Blunt free to throw you 100 balls, but right. is that to say that anybody, no matter who's the quarterback, will give the ball. Well, you want quality throws, you want quality targets, you want, it to be part of a winning formula as well. He would take the money because this is the time to strike. This is the time he can maximize his earnings.
Let me ask you the ultimate setup question. So I'm telling you in advance, it's a setup question. Who's the next coach of the Dallas Cowboys? Because Mike McCarthy ain't gonna make it past this year. I had a weird thought about who the next coach could be, but I wanted to hear yours first.
I have no idea because I just don't see it. I don't see it being a Belichick.
No, I think it might be Zimmer.
Well, it could be Zimmer, but
damn,
does Zimmer excite? Does Zimmer excite the fan base?
No, he don't.
I mean,
he don't.
I mean.
Hold it. Okay. Jerry has proven he don't care about the coach exciting the fan base. Mike McCarthy didn't excite the fan base. Wade Phillips didn't excite the fan base. Jason Garrett didn't excite the fan base.
Jason Garrett did excite the fan base.
Well, I know. I would say this. I think the difference with Mike McCarthy, which he went away from.
It was when he had a championship.
He got a championship, okay? At least he got a title. That's some credibility that comes with a guy who won a title. Zimmer's never won a title.
No, but Zimmer as a head coach was good. Teams made the playoffs every year, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just saying,
I think your point is valid Jerry don't care. What I'm saying is Mike McCarthy and Jason Garrett did excite the fan base, but you're right, Jerry don't care about that. As we wouldn't have got Chan Gailey, Dave Campo, all them cats like that. So he don't care. But there have been coaches that I got excited about. So yeah,
I think that we're at a different point for the Chan Gailey and Dave Campo eras. Number one, especially after you go get a Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think that you bring Wade, and Wade was just of the opposite of Bill.
Can I say something real quick, man?
Yeah.
I'm just gonna say this, and you can fuss at me if you want to. Bill Parcells is almost, to me, at the Jimmy Johnson level, meaning you realize that was 20 years ago. That just didn't happen yesterday. That's like 20 years ago.
I know, but you guys brought in the examples of Dave Campbell and Chan Gailey as evidence.
No, that was Joe. That wasn't me.
I'm just as evidence of the type of coaches he brings in. So I'll just put that out there as well.
So it's been a minute since he had a big time superstar head coach that everybody was like, "Oh, he's that dude." Like, I don't think Belichick wants the job. He'd look around. Because Jerry's not changing, you're going to have to, you know, have your traveling circus. I don't think Belichick wants any part of that.
All of that, for sure. Like I said, it's I don't know. And so, you know, it's fun. You know, it's fun for you guys on the outside who don't have to come to the coaching search to still be a speculator. I don't have interest to speculate on the coaching search right now, personally.
I said it was a setup question.
It's all speculation.
Yeah. You know, I have no interest in doing that. Mike McCarthy is ready to bet on himself. He's trying to win. He believes in himself. He's betting on himself, even in a situation, you know, where, you know, it doesn't seem, it looks like he's dead man walking.
The reason I said what I said is, and you say he looks like he's dead man walking, and he does, but why does he look like that? He looks like that because Jerry has gone from all in to we ain't had nobody to let's do less with more to saying, hey, we got to get people to ball. Basically, he's blaming coaching for not winning. So,
he's putting on coaching.
Yeah, I'm blaming the coaches because we ain't winning at the level I think we ought to win. But I'm not going to give you no more help, and I'm not going to give you no contract extension. So, you know,
He generally blamed it on the defense coach. He's basically put it all on that
Quinn.
On Quinn and that defense. They talked about that defense, you know, the defense in the third quarter of that game when they thought really they came out halftime, they could get back in the game against Green Bay, and that was like the worst they've ever seen. And they said guys were trying too much, trying to do too much, trying to be hero ball, whatever else, because they couldn't stop a nosebleed when they wanted to get back in that game.
The
offense did come to play in the second half. So
that takes us to our old friend Jory Epstein, who she's been so successful lately. I don't even know who she works for these days. I think Yahoo, because she changed
she works for Yahoo.
Two or three times in 2 or 3 years because she was doing really good work. I saw her on a podcast the other day say that she had talked to some coaches who essentially said, and I'm paraphrasing, that Micah Parsons is kind of a front runner. He plays great when they win in or in games where it doesn't really matter that much, but he's not so good in games that do matter. And that potentially you could look at it and say, like, do we really need to make him the highest paid player in the NFL?
That's some BS right there.
I disagree with that whole mindset, and more importantly, the guys that make the money disagree. Because I mean, it's like, you know, Jerry's not letting Michael walk out of here, and I said this, and I kept telling y'all this, and I keep telling people this, is that who does Michael have to help him get to the quarterback? You know, you look at. You know, again, you look at Bosa and the Rams. Look at all the people from Chase Young to they had they signed a defensive tackle from the Eagles last year. You know, look at the people they have around him to help him get to the quarterback. Now, tell me who is a difference maker up front as a pass rusher with the Cowboys?
Nobody.
You know, of that same yoke. You know, and so the notion that Michael does not show up in big games or whatever else. I mean, I remember people used to say the same thing about DeMarcus Ware. He don't have no sacks in the fourth quarter. He not this. I remember it. He don't have no sacks in the fourth quarter. Yeah. Then he goes on to Denver and is a difference and inspiration for that Super Bowl team and teaches a young, you know,
Von Miller. Out
of DeSoto, Von Miller, you know, how to be professional and everything else, and he gets sacks in the Super Bowl. You know, people say what they want to say. They make numbers look like what they want to look like. Micah, the numbers suggest that Micah is, you know, whether is the premier pass rusher in the NFL. From a double team standpoint, from a quarterback hit standpoint, from a pass rush win weight standpoint, anybody trying to nitpick that is stupid.
Yeah. I liked it.
Well, I called BS on that right off the bat. I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, anybody trying to nitpick that is stupid. I would say that if I've said that, yeah, I think that it's true that people pick on Dak too much on these losses and don't say, well, you know, I go back to 2 years ago in San Francisco. You know, when everybody blamed Dak for the loss, I said, well, you know, Trevon Diggs, the guy you paid a whole lot of money, dropped a pick. You know, he didn't hit the tackle. You know, he didn't hit the tight end. They could have prevented the touchdown. You know, there are other reasons why the Cowboys don't win. I mean, Micah didn't have a lot of sacks in that game. He didn't have a lot of sacks in this game. But you do need all your players playing their best. People focus so much on the quarterback that they don't point out that, hey, the whole team did not play well. Yes, Micah and everybody else needs to play well when it matters most. It's not just about the quarterback lifting everybody up, and that will help the quarterback win. But, you know, ain't nobody walks away from Micah.
No. But, I sometimes I like to run these things past. You know, sometimes I like to give you a fastball, man, see what you can do with it. That's all. That's all.
No.
What did you learn at the owners' meetings?
That we go to a city like Orlando and the beautiful city, beautiful weather, and we're sitting in the hallways. Never get to enjoy the city.
Now, wait a minute. I saw you in the hallway, a little bit on social media.
Did you get over there on Orange Blossom Trail over there?
No, I didn't know what that is.
Okay, I know what that is. But all right.
What is it?
Yeah, it's all right. Be all right.
Since you opened that door.
It's Harry Hines. That's what it is.
Oh, that's what Miles Venus is? Oh, the strip
club?
That's the stroke.
First of all, job.
Yes.
You know, this is not your element.
It's really not. That's good. I like for people to know that.
Okay, so
normally I'd be reading the Bible.
Well, you lies, but my Venus is kept.
Hold on. You said I'm lying. What am I holding up right here? The good book is right here. The good book is right here.
Well, you need to quit playing. You need to quit playing like that.
Matter of fact, let me find
quit playing. Quit playing,
play. Y'all a verse for Mike. Hey,
God know who playing with his word now. Quit playing. See what I'm saying? You need to quit playing like that. Lightning strike everywhere.
Matter of fact, the word for today is be strong and of good courage. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Who shall I fear? See, that's what we want.
Right, step back. Step back, Clarence. Step back so you don't get hit by that bolt of lightning that's coming. You understand?
All right, let's move on.
Don't play with Jesus, dog. Quit playing.
I would say this, you know, from the owners' meeting, you know, I think the Cowboys are really better at linebacker. They're expecting, and they should expect, the Marvin Vaughn Overshawn to come in and Eric Kendricks to come in. They're better at linebacker. One thing is funny, it's another example of the owner's meeting. But so Jerry tells us on Sunday, I asked him about left tackle. Oh, yeah, Tyler Smith, that guy there, that's the primary option for us at left tackle. The next 2 days, Stephen Jones and
Mike McCarthy,
like, are we going to keep, right now, we keep a Tyler left guard. You know, obviously, you know, it depends on what they get in the draft, but that just tells you that Jerry sometimes doesn't be saying anything, you know.
If I learned anything from y'all, I'm going to be on the outside. You know, I'm one of them guys on the outside, like you said. But if I learn anything from y'all, don't believe Jerry half the damn time.
Well, yeah. I mean, he just be saying stuff that sounds good to him.
Yeah.
You know, just like with the all-in stuff, you know. It's funny. It's just with Jerry.
Yeah.
So Jerry's at the owner's meeting. We at the big table. And he points to me, you put that all in on me. You put that all in on my neck. He's blaming me. My old drinking buddy. You put that all in on my neck.
Oh, that's funny. He said, you
know,
that.
Because I asked him the question at the Senior Bowl, and
I don't know how to respond to that.
You know, okay, hello?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, what was that?
That was Siri.
Okay. But, you know, so, but then the next 3 days, he keeps, well, that's all in. And this is all in. I mean, he keeps repeating all in, you know, as if his buzzword for the weekend or for the off season. But now he acts like, well, I didn't mean it that way. Well, how do you mean all in?
Yeah.
There's only one way to mean all in.
For sure.
No, what, you know, so is different.
Yeah, so, but just getting back, you know, when you saw me those pictures on social media, that's the Monday night NFL reception that the league throws at the owners' meeting for all the people that come, or they're invited to the owners' meeting, but that's at the hotel. And so, you know, outside of that, it's just, you know, it was nothing. But, yeah, you know, you have to, Vince Carter and Ryan Clark and Jason Garrett and all the people who are associated with the NFL, not just owners or things like that, you know, and but yeah, that's, you know, the Cowboys stayed 5 minutes and they went to dinner for about 5 hours. Usually that's what we get to talk to Jerry and Steven and Mike off the record, you know, over some drinks, but they didn't show up. They showed up and left and went to a team dinner. You know, one interesting thing, you know, is we're talking about players they're going to count on, and Mozzie Smith, who lost 30 pounds last year, was a bust as a defensive tackle, no tackle, first round pick.
Who told him
had to have shoulder surgery at the end of the season instead of spending the offseason, you know, training to maximize, you know, himself? He's going to rehab and won't be ready to the start of training camp. And still has to put this weight back on. But that's the person they're counting on to replace Jonathan Hankins at a nose tackle. Nobody's happy with that situation.
No, I saw that, man. That was actually the last question I had for you. That's shoulder rehab is something else because, you know, when you got to use your hands and put your hands on people and explode and hold them off. If your shoulder's not strong, that's a significant problem. And, you know, trying to lift weights and put that weight back on so you can have good weight, not just fat weight, that's more than the notion, as Grandma used to say.
Well, he needs to start eating, okay? Fat boys should not lose weight. If I sign you to be a fat boy, you need to stay being a fat boy, okay?
Yeah, I wish I had that problem.
You know.
Yeah, for sure.
I need you to be a wide body nose tackle plugger. You know, I don't need you to be a skinny boy. I need you to be a fat boy. Okay. Right. You know, but he's key to, you know, what they want to do on defense. They need, you know, their big guys in the middle. And they want to be bigger. So it's all about Zim's defense, you know, and I wish we could talk to Zim. You know, and I can't wait till we start talking to him how he wants to line these guys up and what that's going to look like. You know, one thing they talked about was, you know, things will be different from Zim to from Quinn to Zim. You know, it's stopping the run will matter, but it won't be just about getting sacks. You know, stopping the run is going to be a cornerstone of what they want to do. It won't be just lip service. It's going to be a cornerstone in what they emphasize. You know, Quinn talked about stopping the run, but they emphasize getting to the quarterback.
Right. Now, Zim is all about stopping the run. He talks about it's an attitude. It's a philosophy. It's a lifestyle. And if they don't do nothing, they'll stop the run next year, provided they got any kind of personnel, because it's an emphasis, and he'll make sure he gets it done. But, yeah, man, I appreciate you swinging through this morning after the long flight delay yesterday.
Hey, man. Happy Q-versary, man.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it, man.
40 years, huh?
Okay. 40 years. It's been on my old king.
Yeah, my wife is old Zeta.
Yeah, that's awesome.
My daughter, my mom is Zeta. So. My daughter is a Zeta too.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, that's
all right. It's all good.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah, they got on my ass for drinking out the Zeta cup the other day.
Wait, why are you drinking out the Zeta cup?
Man, there was a damn cup in the cabinet. They was like, "Dad, what you doing?" I said, man, this is a cup. It was the last cup in the cabinet. I got it. Well, I don't do it no more, dog. You know, I drive the Cadillac. Yeah, I drive the Cadillac. It's got Zeta plates on it.
Yeah, well, you pay for that.
I'm just saying.
But you drinking that cup, and you just going to wash your cup. You don't be drinking out of Zeta cup.
Roger that. They going to be happy to hear that. That's why that's funny. They got on my ass about that cup.
And they wasn't playing either.
They wasn't playing. You don't see us drinking. You don't see us drinking out of Army cup. I don't care. Well, you can't drink out the Zeta cup. All right, Ken. My bad. It is what it is.
These are the things you get on Shock Talk. You can't get nowhere else.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. We appreciate it. Thank you. We'll talk to you next week. That's Clarence E. Hill Jr. The E stands for every time he comes on, it's a good time. He's brought to you each and every Friday by Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820 West Mockingbird, home of the Jam Session Bowl, which is food to live for. I've had a few friends recently roll through the Jam Session Bowl. roll through Smokey John's and try the Jam Session Bowl. I keep telling y'all, I don't lie about these things. As a former fat guy, food is important to me. If it ain't no good, I tell you it ain't no good. But I'm telling you, Smokey John's Barbecue and the Jam Session Bowl is off the chain. You need to swing through there. You need to get it. You need to try it. You need to send me a picture that you did so I can shout you out. Now, Jam Session Bowl is only on the secret menu. Like, it ain't up on the side where they got all the menu items there. You got to ask for it. You got to know it exists. So that's what I'm here for. Now, here's what it is. It's a bowl, obviously, with either mac and cheese, which is how Joe got down, or mashed potatoes. And then you put 2 out of 5 smoked meats, your choice. I rock with the brisket and the sausage. And then all that stuff they put on a loaded baked potato, like chives and bacon bits and sour cream and butter, all that stuff, cheese, all that stuff they put on top of it, man. Then they drizzle it with sauce or they drench it. Again, your choice. You can have it like you want it. And it is to live for. What is it, Joe? What is it, Joe? It's love in your mouth. That's the Jam Session Bowl. Now, if you need Smokey John's in your life.
Bro, you keep sticking my name next to that. You're messing up their spot. You keep sticking my name next to that.
Man, I'm trying to get you to participate.
No, I'm not. I don't know. Participate in what exactly? What you trying to get me participate in?
If you need Smokey John's in your life a little more immediately.
There you go.
You can go to the marketplace. Or you can go to the website, smokeyjohns.com. Click on the marketplace. And you can have the rub right here, or the sauce, delivered to your house in a matter of days. If you got to have it today, hop in the Cadillac with the Zeta plates.
Stop it.
And roll up to HEB. They got them in Burleson, McKinney, Waxahachie, Allen, Frisco. Walk in, look for it on your shelves. It's there. Bring it home. Put it on your food. Right quick. Simple as that. Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820 West Mockingbird. Home of the Jam Session Bowl. You need to get it. It is food to live for. It's also love in your mouth. Delicious.
Yeah, you zesty, dog. Figure that out. Let's move.
We're moving right along now, man.
Real zesty. Hell no, we ain't moving right along. You real zesty, dog.
Come on, man. Let's move right along.
Yeah. Now, you don't get to say that and then say, let's move right along. I don't understand. You being real. You and P. Diddy got some things going. Y'all zesty over there. Go ahead with that.
It's all good.
Yeah. It's good for y'all.
Let's move on to baseball. Texas Rangers.
Do that.
By the time you hear this podcast, the Texas Rangers will have unfurled the championship banner from 2023. And they'll either be 1-0 or 0-1 against the Chicago Cubs, who are in town. But what I wanted to talk about real quick is, to me, and I'm not breaking any news here, they were awful in the bullpen last year. And it, to me, it's really kind of a minor miracle that they won the World Series. Because if their bullpen had been worth a damn last year, I mean, they might have run away with the American League West. But instead, they had the worst bullpen ERA in the American League at 4.08. They only had 30 saves and more than 60 save opportunities had a fewer than 50% save rate, dog. Only teams with fewer saves than the Texas Rangers. Kansas City, Chicago, White Sox, and Oakland. All of which have one thing in common. They suck. All right, they gave up 85 homers out of the bullpen, second most in the American League, 557 strikeouts, the worst in the American League. The bullpen was atrocious. It was trash. It was terrible. And they still managed to win the World Series. So when you look at this season, because they got a lot of question marks with their starting pitching, you know, they don't have Scherzer. He's not coming back until after the All-Star break probably. They don't have Jacob deGrom. He's not expected back until August at the earliest. You know, they got a bunch of guys like Dane Dunning who are probably six-inning pitchers. And so when you look at their rotation and you look at what's going, how the team is constructed, the bullpen is going to have to pitch a lot. They understood that, and Chris Young went out there, made some additions, and now the bullpen's kind of being talked about as if guys can replicate themselves, you know, one of the Rangers' strengths. Leclerc, who started off horribly last year, lost his closer's job within the first month of the season to Wade Smith. He'll be a closer. 2.68 ERA, 67 Ks, 57 innings. Was money in the playoffs. Now, the only thing about Leclerc is he does have a tendency to keep things interesting. He walks a few too many batters for my likes. That's just your boy here. For me, he walks a few too many. He gets caught in nibbling a little bit sometimes. But in the playoffs last year, he figured out how to get it done. 13.2 innings, 14 strikeouts. It's the six walks that bothered me. Five of those occurred in the ALCS. Now, got to tell you, in the World Series, he was good. Three appearances, three in the third innings, one hit, four strikeouts, and a save. Real, real solid. If Leclerc can pitch the way he did at the end of last season and the closing situation is good, that's a huge positive because, you know, they should be able to pile up some wins. You got Dave Robertson signed in the offseason. He's a vet, real vet, late 30s. 3.03 ERA last year, 78 Ks, 65 innings. He had 18 saves last year, which means if Leclerc needs a day off, you should feel comfortable letting Robertson close the game out. And that to me is an important deal. They also signed Kirby Yates, 3.28 ERA, 80 Ks, 60 innings. All right? Again, he's mid-30s. Again, did you hear Robertson? 78 Ks, 65 innings. Yates, 80 strikeouts, 60 innings. Here's the deal. You want your bullpen guys to have swing and miss stuff. Why? When you put the ball in play, bad things can happen when you're a reliever. Why? Because you come in the game, it's usually people on base. Usually a tenuous situation. Usually a one-run game, two-run game, runners on base. If you allow people to put the ball in play, you give up hits, errors, bad things happen. You want guys at the back of your bullpen throwing heat so that you can get strikeouts and people don't move. So that's why it's important that Yates and Robertson and even Spores, the playoff hero from last year, have high strikeout to inning ratios. So, you know, that's your Texas Rangers. It's going to be a fascinating season for them, fascinating journey for them. Like I said, that banner being unfurled tonight is going to be a huge deal. They get the rings on Saturday. That's going to be a huge deal. And then we'll kind of settle into the business of playing baseball.
So let me ask you. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Okay, so would you say, and when you talk baseball, it's music to my ears. I like that shit. Would you say they are built to defend the title? Because it feels to me like last year they really wasn't built to win it, but people got hot. Would you say this year that we need people to get hot, or are they being built? Because what I'm hearing from you, the intel I'm hearing from you is like we're missing a lot of the key pieces that were hot last year, but they're trying to replace it. Are we built to defend the title or not?
Oh, I think so, but I think you have to be realistic. Meaning, yeah. If you look at the American League, You know, let me do it this way. I think it's a little easier for me personally to read it off. So give me 2 seconds while I look this up. But if you look at last year in the American League, the Orioles won 101 games. They better because they're a younger team like the Rangers, and they got a good farm system because they stunk for a decade. They won 101 games. The Rays won 99 games. Then you got the Astros that won 90. The Rangers won 90. The Mariners won 88. The Blue Jays won 89. That's a lot of good teams. I didn't even mention the Yankees. And the Yankees won 82 games last year. But don't forget, Aaron Judge was hurt a lot of the last season. They've made some moves in the offseason to get better. So I think they will be better. What I'm trying to say is, the American League is rugged, man. And so they were good last year. But it's a lot of competition. And there's, you know, so you could have a better team and not win the World Series this year is what I'm saying.
Right, okay.
You know, but I will say this. The reason why the Rangers should be a tough out is that lineup is no joke. With Semien at the top, Corey Seager, and now you're going to have Evan Carter and Wyatt Langford, the rookie, who everybody is saying is, you know, I mean, they're literally making comparisons to Mike Trout about this guy. That seems like a lot to live up to. They added them to the lineup, man. And so, you know, their lineup is long, it's deep. Josh Young is a young guy. There's no holes in the Rangers lineup. So they're going to score a lot of runs. And if the bullpen is solidified, like I said, they had like a 50% save rate. If you just win, save half of those games and have a normal save rate, which is like 85-90%, I mean, they'd have won. They easily won more than 100 games last year. So they got a terrific team. But the American League is loaded, and you know, it's just going to be who performs in the playoffs, because the Rangers were a very clutch team last year. This much we know: if you got a bullpen and you got a lineup with some bats and guys who are oblivious to pressure, because the Rangers got a lot of flatliners, they will have a chance in September to play meaningful games, and then October, see if they can make it happen. That's what I believe. And again, I don't think I'm going out on the limb by saying any of that. But
well, that just is what you all you just said just makes me go, well, if their record ain't all that halfway through the season, I'm not going to panic because they're in a tough division.
Yeah.
And, yeah. That's a good thing sometimes, being in a tough division, because iron sharpens iron.
Yeah, and it's not going to be – like, even if you look at last year, the Astros and the Rangers went down to the final day to determine who would win the American League West.
Yep.
And we spent so much time focused on them. Don't forget, the Mariners were only 2 games back.
Yeah.
Only 2 games back. You know, so the Rangers, you know, we'll get a little early test because they got – they got the Cubs for the first 3. Then the Astros come to town right away. And then next week, they go to the Astros for 4. So you got 7 of your first 14 games against the Astros. And it's not going to determine the division unless you go 0-7 or 1-6. But it'll give you some insight into how this season's going to play out. But I expect the Rangers, the Astros, the Mariners to be bunched going into September, and then it'll be, you know, who can catch fire and who can win games when it matters most.
Well, that's good info for us casual fans, because, you know, it's going to be a lot of people that's going to be all in with the Rangers this year because they won the championship. And it's going to be the other half of the fans going, y'all need to stop it because y'all panicking and all this other stuff, and chill, because this is what they did last year and they won the whole thing. So, yeah, it's all good. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, man, and you have to always remind yourself, because we're in Texas, you cannot have a football mentality to a baseball season.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a basketball season.
It's long. It's long. Yeah.
I mean, it's so long.
Yeah.
That you could suck. You could. You could literally suck as a team through July.
Mm-hmm.
Catch fire and win a division because you played great baseball in August and September.
That's kind of what they did, ain't it?
Well, no, they was they had a down stretch in the middle of the season because most of the guys got hurt.
Yeah.
And then they picked it up. But you can also, as a player, have a poor season for 4 months and turn it around the last two and end up with a good season. Because the season is so long. Teams catch fire at different times.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you just have to keep it all in perspective. Don't forget, the Rangers lost 72 games last year.
Yeah.
You know, that seemed like a lot of games. They lost 72 games, and they were still one of the best teams in the American League. So, you know, there's going to be some ebb and flow to the season. There always is. But the Rangers are poised to be one of the contenders and one of the teams you got to deal with when it comes to winning the championship. And on that note, let's take a trip around the block. We're going to talk about your favorite subject today, because I'm curious about it. When did you fall in love with guns?
Probably at about 10.
Really? See, this is always interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we live in a gun culture. But I think a lot of it is what you were exposed to as a kid during your formative years and who exposed it to you. For example, I grew up in a single-parent household with my mother, and we didn't have any of her brothers. She got three brothers. They all lived out of town. And the men who I grew up with, who were my father figures in Dallas, weren't gun people. And so I've never really been around guns. And so I'm not for guns or against guns, whatever. I don't have any. Guns don't do anything to me in terms of a hobby or anything else. But when I find people who have an affinity for guns, it's usually that they grew up around them, or their father had them, or their uncle had them, or their big brother went out with them, either hunting or shooting, and that's how they come to love guns. So, who is it that introduced you to guns?
Well, first of all, it's probably my grandpa, because I watched a lot of Westerns with him. And about, I got a picture of me at about 8 years old, and right. I got a set of six shooters. If you're my age, which is 56, you probably grew up with them six shooters with the roll-up caps in them.
Damn sure did.
Yeah, I had them six shooters. I had a pair of boots, and you had to yank both of them off of me for me to go to bed or take a bath, you know. So, you know, it was either going to sleep and take them damn guns off and take your ass to bed, or take your damn guns off and take a bath,
right, you know. Right.
So that was kind of introduction. Then I was about 10. We had a little farm outside of Terrell in a town called Elmo, probably about 15, 20 acres. We still have it. And nobody lived out there at the time but us. And so I was allowed to have a 410. First thing I shot was a 22.
What is a 410?
410 is a shotgun. And I was allowed to shoot that. And then I had a 22 rifle.
Right.
And 22 long is what it shot. And I was allowed to walk around. I mean, I drove a truck on the farm. It was probably about maybe about 800 yards to our little hollow where we dump stuff. I got to drive down there at about 10, 11. And then I got to hunt. I never shot anything because me and my brother would be traipsing through the woods and being all loud. I shot a couple of trees, and that was my introduction to firearms. And then after that, I probably didn't touch one for about, I don't know. I went to college. I went to high school. I didn't hunt, but I probably didn't touch anything until I got to the service. And once I got to the service, it was like I was reborn. And all the weaponry you can have. I probably knew at one time 26 weapon systems.
What does that mean?
That means different platforms you shoot off of, different weapon systems. M16A2, M240, 240 Charlie. Just a lot of different weapons. You learn 26 weapon systems, 9mm, 45.
Well, hold up. Is each gun a weapon system? Is that
yeah,
what you're saying?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was 26 guns.
It's more than that.
Meaning, like, so Like, oh, so each one of them is, I mean, I guess I kind of do know. Each one of them is different, so every time it's different, that's a different weapon system.
Yeah, if you have a Mark 19, that's a grenade launcher. That's a weapon system. A 50 cal, there's a 50 cal, you got 50 cal, you got a Barrett 50 cal sniper rifle. You have the 50 cal that's mounted, the Mach Deuce. So those are different weapon systems. So if you count them up, it can add up.
Oh, all right.
Maybe 17 to 26, something like that. Because when you start modifying them, you know, like grenade launcher, an M79 is a grenade launcher. But a 203 is a grenade launcher mounted on an M16A2. So it's different thing. You know, it's different weapon system.
Now, I'm always just curious. What is it that you love about guns?
What is I love about guns? I don't know. It's probably the... kind of hard to explain. It's probably the...
That's what I'm asking.
The...
I mean, I said that because you said you was walking around and I had the bolt going and I just heard the bolt and that sounded like music to my ears.
Well, when you release the bolt on an AR or M16 and it... Yeah, first of all, that's about... in about 8, 9, 10 different languages, that means sit your ass down. Alright? Or listen to me, you know. When you can break that thing apart, it's like guys that work on cars. You can break that thing apart, put it back together, make it sound better, or just hear the sound of a car cranking up, and you worked on it. Well, when that boat goes forward and it does that,
right?
Man, that means everything is right. That means it's a well-oiled machine. It's one of them things where I'm not a mechanic guy. I'm not a guy who works on the car. I can get a truck to run. I can get 18-wheelers to run all day because that's been what I worked on. Or that's what I drove. But my car, I'm taking that shit to a mechanic.
Right.
But my weapon system, I can work that. And plus, I was trained on that. So I got an affinity for that. And when I pull that boat back and let that boat go, it sounds sweet because it brings back memories. Some good, some bad, most of them good. When you go to a range and you go to a range with a bunch of guys and y'all trying to outshoot each other, y'all trying to help each other, it's the camaraderie. It's the camaraderie you get when you play sports. It's the same thing. Or when you guys are working out at the gym and y'all pushing each other, it's the same thing when you go to a range and you're trying to help a guy shoot 30 out of 30. Or you trying to help a guy, you know, get better. It's that camaraderie. It's kind of like that. So... it's a lot of things go with that. Now, I don't have 50 guns just because, but I don't knock a guy that got 50 guns just because. They all do something different.
Well, you know? I think that's what, I mean, I compare it to, I told some, you know, I had these conversations all the time with different people. And I say, oh, I see why somebody could have 6 or 7 cars. And somebody looked at me like, why? I can't see that. I said, sure you can, man. Yeah. You got a sedan and you got an SUV. You know, they do different things. You got a sports car.
Yeah.
And then maybe you got a couple different sports cars because one is a coupe and one is a two-seater. And
yep.
I mean, yeah, dog. I mean, if you had the money, I could see why you would have.
Well, weapon systems are like that, too, because I got friends that, like, I have my AR is iron sights. That's the stick shifter shooting. That's where you look through the sights, I don't have any scopes or anything like that.
Right.
Because I like doing it the old-fashioned way. And a lot of weapon systems like the AR, you can add the bipod to that. You don't need it, but you could add a bipod. You can add a shifting stock. You can do, it's just like that with cars and motorcycles. Motorcycles, you know, when I had my motorcycle, I had the windshield. That's it. Everything else was stock. And guess what? When I sold it back, they gave me all my money for it because I didn't modify it. But everything is modifiable. So... that's why people have multiple stuff. I mean,
yeah.
You know, why have one fishing rod when you can have 9, you know, 9 other ones that can do stuff? Yeah, why have one shotgun, you know?
How many fishing rods you got, Dave? Just off the top of your head.
About 17.
You said 17. That man said he had 20.
There you go.
David does a content for us.
There you go.
Yeah,
you got it. Nah. That's what I'm saying. You can have multiple things, but like with the cars is a great example. Cause you know, all cars have different engines and some of them have the what they say, the rooftop that comes off. And I mean, some of them convertible, some of them, don't know. But yeah, I guess I never had nobody. I have never had nobody ask me about why. Like, I just do. It started when I was young, and then when I got trained up, it was like, all right.
Yeah, when you get trained up, it probably opens up a whole another world because you have a whole another level of understanding and sophistication to them.
Yeah, so, yeah. Plus is you know, that and a good dog is the best protection.
That man said a good dog.
Yep. It don't matter how big the dog can hear somebody coming way before you.
Right.
And that weapon system can reach their ass way before they get to you.
Oh, yeah, them little bitty dogs, they hear it and start yapping around before, you know, you can even think about somebody coming.
Yeah.
So, no, I get that. You know, polar bear can smell a seal from miles away.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, something I saw on the Discovery Channel the other day. One of my hobbies.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's our trip around the block. Guns! Why Big Joe and the Big Rig loves them? I've always wanted to have the conversation with him. We just never got around to doing it. And that's what the show is for sometimes. Had these conversations that we can't find time to have during the days or over the years. But, you know, the Mavericks, they will play Sacramento on Friday. It's a back-to-back, so to speak, because they play the same opponent twice, even though they played them Tuesday. They blew out the Kings by about 25 the other night. Terrific defensive performance. Let's see how they do Friday night, man, because all of a sudden they're only a game and a half out of fourth place in the West. I still have a hard time believing they can win consistently enough down the stretch to get there. But the fact that they added Gafford and P.J. Washington has really changed this roster. Gafford and Lively in the middle is giving the Mavericks a post presence they haven't had, you know, basically in forever. And now, when you got Kyrie and you got Luka cooking the way they're cooking, dude, they got a really good team. They're playing some really good defense. And these next couple weeks heading into the playoffs are going to be interesting and fascinating because everybody else is still playing pretty well, too. And so if the Mavericks can grab the fifth spot, I'm not really thinking they get to the fourth. But if they can sell in at the fifth, they got a chance to make some noise, man, because they're feeling each other right now. And they got two superstars who at a moment's notice can truly take a game over. And there's literally nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I like Lively, man. I like Gafford and Lively. I knew about Gafford, but Lively is everything you wanted him to be. Plus, he can run a lot better than I thought he could.
Yeah.
Man, he can get up the floor. Sometimes people can run just because they're young, but nah, he can actually move a little bit. Yeah. And plus now he don't get tired because he got Gafford coming in.
Dog, that's it.
Yeah.
And they kind of feed off each other. You always got one. They both, and don't sleep on this, y'all. You've heard people talk about this over the years, but you can really see it with both of these guys, so don't sleep on it. They have great hands for catching. I saw Lively catch a ball at his knees the other day and then go up and dunk it.
Yeah,
You know, that's an underrated talent, man.
That's an underrated.
Good hands.
That's an underrated rating in 2K.
I knew that was coming.
When a guy got good hands, yeah, I'm lobbing him the ball all day. 95 hands. What's my man name? Gordon for Denver. That dude got the best hands on the game.
Well, see, and this is what I'm talking about, because when you got Kyrie and you got Luka, they're all dangerous, but now they got guys they can pick and roll with and just lob to the rim. That makes their offense a whole nother beast to try to sustain. And on those nights where they're hitting their threes from the corner, it's a wrap. There's nothing you can do with the Mavericks on those nights. What has happened is, with the addition of P.J. Washington and Gafford, is that now they can win on those nights where they're not hitting those corner threes. And that, to me, was the difference between what we've seen lately, where they won 9 out of 10, and what we saw earlier this season, where they were good, but they were very inconsistent, because so much of it was based on whether they could hit the corner three or not.
Yeah, I wasn't excited about PJ, but he been doing what he's been doing. We haven't, you know, he's not a guy that we have to have do some, so it's all good. You know,
what do we talk about all the time, man? He's a role player.
Yeah.
And when you added him, You gave him a role that he can handle,
Yeah.
And then you move Josh Green and some other people back, and now their role has changed slightly, but they gave them a role that they're better at. And
well, his defense better than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've said this when he showed up, and I think people slept on it a little bit, but I'm telling you, it can work both ways now. It can work both ways. But he's from Frisco. He playing at the crib.
Damn. Why did I miss that? He's from Frisco. PJ is from Frisco. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
He's playing at the crib. His mom and dad are at the games. Because don't forget, he's a young guy. He ain't but like 24, 23.
They need to be with him because that keep his ass away from Brittany Renner.
Stop it. So what I'm saying is, some people say they want to come home, and then home becomes this big distraction. And they're like, you know what? I need to bounce.
You need and to be home. Yeah.
Some people, like you just said, come home, and they're like, mom told me to come over and have my favorite meal before I went to the game today. And you're just in a good place mentally, you know. And when I say good place mentally, I don't mean it as a problem, but you're just peaceful. Like, wow, yeah, this is cool. I'm at the crib, da-da-da, go back to my old barber, you know. It's familiarity. And like I said, it can work both ways now. But in his case, it seems to be a very calming thing and very cool thing for him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you play your best or you work your best, you do your best stuff, normally it's when you're at peace. Everything's cool. Everything's working kind of in unison. You got a little zen about you. And you can just go do your thing because you don't really have any worries, so to speak. And I think that's where he is. And it's made him a nice player. Plus, and I don't think you can overlook this, in Dallas, where's all the attention going? It's basically going to Luka and Kyrie, except for those people who hate Tim Hardaway Jr. But it's going to those guys.
Damn.
So the media don't really bother you.
If you got people that hate Tim Hardaway?
Dog, they're trying to run Tim Hardaway out of town.
I ain't trying to run him out of town. I agree with you. He get hot, put him in. He don't get hot, sit him down. Tim know that. You know, I know that. Yeah. You know that. I don't hate him for it.
Vinny Johnson, the microwave.
Man. Yeah, I don't hate him for it. It's been players like him in the NBA since the NBA started.
Yep.
So it's all good. We just don't have to rely on him now. So it'll make our team better.
Yeah, although he's still the third best offensive player.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, if he ain't hot, we can do something else. You know? Right. So it's all good. Yeah, I ain't got no problem with Tim.
As I told y'all, if Tim Hardaway was your fifth best offensive player, now you're a real championship team. Mm-hmm. But as a third one, you know, you still got some holes to fill. But Mavericks, big game Friday against Sacramento. We'll see if they can make it happen. If they get that sweep, man, where they were really just hoping for a split. But if they can sweep those two games, that is huge in terms of getting to that fifth spot in the playoffs. You know, and putting yourself in prime position to do damage once you get to the playoffs. Like to always remind you guys, take 1 second right now, maybe 2 seconds. Go to the YouTube page, Real Jacques Talk. Subscribe, like, leave us a comment. You can follow us on IG. While you're over there, you might as well go hit us up on IG, follow us there. We got big things popping in May. Pretty soon we'll tell you about it. Need about another week and a half, 2 weeks to start letting you know. We got big things popping in May on the YouTube channel. Go ahead and subscribe now so you're locked in for when it starts. You can always find me on Twitter, X, whatever we call it these days, at JJT Journalist. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor is the handle. The book, Coach Prime, Deion Sanders and the Making of Men, you can find that at bookstores everywhere. I just saw one in Barnes & Noble the other day. Guess what I did? I signed it and put it back up. Even the folks at Barnes & Noble didn't know. My gift to you. You can also get it online.
Boy.
Wherever you want to find it. BarnesandNoble.com, Walmart.com, wherever you find books, it's there. Amazon.com. So pick that up. You'll be happy that you did. Everything you want to know about why Deion Sanders is making it happen at Colorado and why he's a revolutionary head coach, you can find in my book because I spent a year with him at Jackson State. For Big Joe and the Big Red, till we talk again, you guys be blessed.